In America, you have a right to be stupid.
I mean, I do think at a certain point you've made enough money.
$100 billion, $1 trillion.
Come on!
If you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Listen to reason.
We're lending money we don't have to kids who will never be able to pay it back, to train them for jobs that don't exist anymore.
My faith has really allowed me to overcome a lot of things and hard work. You know, nothing comes easy.
We're so focused on getting into the corner office, we forgot how to build a corner office.
There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as a law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
Finding real answers to form real solutions for a better America. KLZ 560 presents Rush to Reason. Here's your host, John Rush.
And I'm your host, John Rush, Rush to Reason, KLZ 560. Myself, Rachel Keene, conservative mama, with me today as well. Our first guest of the day, Jim Dennison. Charlie is rounding up as we speak, so we should have him any moment. Before that, though, the impossible question yesterday, which I didn't, this one I never would have guessed. The average child does this more than 1,500 times before they turn 18, and that is they beg for a pet.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that.
You can see that? You have kids, you know.
Oh, yeah, my daughter. We're,
can I get a pet?
Oh, yeah. We're on that. We're trying to figure out dogs. So somebody out there can recommend a good family dog.
Oh, I can.
Really?
Oh, yes.
What would you recommend?
Well, let's...
After Jim.
I'll come back to that. We'll go Jim and I'll
curious.
Do that. Okay, today's impossible question. Answer this on the RushToReason.com website. In a survey, about 25% of people say that it's never okay to do this at work. What is it? So again, in a survey, about 25% of people say it's never okay to do this at work. What is it? And by the way, these people are wrong. That's a little hint I will give you. Jim Dennison joining us now, though. Jim, welcome. How are you today, sir?
Hey, John, I'm great. Good to be on with you and Rachel.
Well, enjoy it always. Appreciate you taking time out of your day to be with us. And your latest DennisonForum.org piece is on the Supreme Court considering a case that would... Yeah, and I think there's misconception here, Jim. There's a lot of liberals even on the left saying this is going to eliminate Roe v. Wade. That's not necessarily the case. They are going to take up a case that might change some things with it, but unless I'm wrong, it's not going to get rid of Roe v. Wade.
No, you're exactly right about that, John. And in fact, that's by far the more plausible way to deal with abortion is in the pathway that's being thought about here. So the real short version of this, as you know, is that right now, Roe v. Wade allows abortion until the fetus is considered viable, usually 22 to 24 weeks. This case that Supreme Court chose to take up would limit abortion to 15 weeks in the sense of that's when the fetus can detect pain. And so you could only have an abortion up until the 15th week. Well, what the Supreme Court is taking up is the question, are all pre-viability restrictions unconstitutional? If they find that they are in fact constitutional, then it would be up to states. Like Texas earlier this week signed a bill that would not allow abortion once the fetus could detect pain, which is 6 weeks. And so it would be up to a state. Some like New York would keep everything in place as it is, probably. Some place like Texas would be more restrictive, or Oklahoma or whatever. It would not abolish Roe v. Wade. It would give states the right to do what they want to do, which has been the argument all along.
Which is what it ought to be anyways. That's exactly right.
Exactly. Yep. Took the states' right and made it national when they never should have. That's been one of the complaints all along.
And Jim, I'm probably going to say something that a lot of even our Christian listeners may not like or appreciate me saying, but that is the simple fact, and I as much as I hate to say these words, if anybody thinks they're ever going to abolish abortion, I think that's really a pipe dream because, frankly, Jim, I don't ever see that happening. If we get this, I think this is a huge win because you're not going to abolish it.
I'm afraid you're exactly right. It's already been made clear that if Roe v. Wade were abolished tomorrow, 28 states, or returned to the states, 28 states would make it legal in their state. Okay. President Biden is talking about authorizing abortion through congressional fiat and making it a constitutional protection or a Bill of Rights protection, something like that. And so lots of ways that abortion will still be in place, tragically, in some states and some municipalities, even without Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, and again, I want to make sure everybody understands where I come from. I'm not okay with it. I'm not saying that I agree with that.
Right.
I'm just simply stating, you know, Jim, I call my show Rush to Reason for a reason. I look at things in a very reasonable lens, and the reality is, as much as we may want that, I think it's really, I think partly, Jim, and you know, bear with me here for a second, but you know, tell me whether I'm right or wrong. I think even as you know, Christians, and sometimes our strategy when it comes to abortion at times has been off base. And what I mean by that is we have really gone after that total nugget of total abolition. Let's just get rid of it. Let's abolish it completely. Make it illegal. But the reality is we've not done what the left has done when it comes to the social things they have changed in the country, and that is just chip away at it one little chunk at a time. And I think that's a mistake we've made over the years. Your thoughts?
Could not agree more. We need to make abortion abhorrent. We need to get to the place where the culture sees life as sacred from conception to natural death. Right. We're going to be having this conversation about a physician-assisted death coming up, or euthanasia.
Right.
We're already having it about sexual orientation, gender identity, and we're having it about abortion. So if rather than only focusing on the legal, which is certainly a piece of this, no question about that, and I'm completely with you, I absolutely think life begins at conception and abortion is wrong. But how do you get there? Well, one way to get there is to win the battle for hearts and minds by helping people see all life as sacred. And understanding this is not a war on women. This is best for women not to choose abortion either. And you make that argument as well.
I agree. And again, it's just one of those strategic things that there are times where, unfortunately, I don't think we're very strategic and or as strategic as the other side. In other words, sometimes we want everything, our cake and eat it too, if you would. And we don't think strategically enough, even in a long-term game plan. In other words, we don't look 10 years down the road. We tend to look, 10 months down the road. And I think that's one of the things when it comes to, the abortion battle that we've actually lost in. And Jim, one of the best ways, by the way, that we've won in regards to abortion is through a lot of our our caring pregnancy centers where we get ultrasound machines in RVs, and we park those next to Planned Parenthood, and we give, women and girls a chance to walk out and actually see what their unborn baby inside of the womb actually looks like. We've done more to probably, if you would, change the tide. And the numbers, by the way, in abortion continue to go down year after year. And I believe, Jim, because of what we're talking about there, not because we've done it legislatively.
No doubt. In fact, the Catholic Church has been way ahead of a lot of evangelicals in this case, caring about adoption services, caring about the financial issues that often are cited as reasons for abortion, all those sorts of things. Let's remove the reasons for abortion. Only 7% have to do with rape, incest, the health of the fetus, or the health of the mother. Only 7%.
Right.
93% are things about which we can be providing ministry that can absolutely step in that space. We've really, I think, outsourced this to the courts, to the presidency, to the elections, and we've not done the hard work of caring about the souls that are close to us in our own neighborhoods.
Right, and I think fighting to make adoption more of a just affordable thing. Right now, it's very expensive to adopt.
Yeah, I mean, last time I checked, Jim, and I may be off on this, and Rachel, last time I checked, it was around $10,000, and that was many, many years ago, so it's probably
$15,000
to $20,000 now to adopt a child.
And then all the process of it, as you know, Rachel, as well, all the time it takes and the logistics of it, the difficulties of all of that. We couldn't make it more difficult at a time when the church could absolutely be stepping into that space, couldn't we? We could be creating our own pathways to adoption. We could be working with ministries that make it much easier to adopt and much less expensive. That ought to be a massive.
Right.
Unfortunately, I am seeing in some churches and some evangelical movements that adoption really is being championed on a level that could be the case across the board.
Jim, the other thing that I think we've missed the boat on as Christians and organizations and really getting people on our side, and bear with me here because as an employer, I think I can speak to this straight up. We have literally killed off and murdered generations of workforce that we are now, honestly right now, there's 15 million open jobs in America, not enough people really out there to even fill the jobs. Even if everybody came off unemployment, there's not enough to fill all the jobs that we have open. We have literally killed off generations, plural, of workforce. Really, the folks we should be attacking to help us in this manner to really, again, to promote adoption and things along those lines is the business community, because that's our future workers.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about that. You're thinking about generations now that have been hindered, that have been hamstrung. You're thinking, obviously, 63 million lives, 57 of which, even if you allow rape, incest, and fetal and mother's health, 57 million that would be in the workforce now, that would be earning, that would be contributing, that would be making an enormous difference for the common good.
That's right.
Then the other piece of it we need to talk about is the degree to which this is eugenics. The degree to which Planned Parenthood clinics are typically placed in minority communities for this proportionate number of minorities that choose abortion, and the church can be speaking into that, can be stepping into that in proactive, powerful ways also.
Again, to me, this is a strategic thing that I believe we as a church, and I put myself into that category because, I am, and I'm not making it critical of all Christian, because I think, to your point, there's been some churches and some organizations that have done really well in this fight, and I will give the Catholic Church kudos where kudos are due, because they have done a very good job in that area. But again, I think there's other ways we could quote-unquote attack this. And by the way, I don't think it's all legislatively speaking. You know, you start working with the business community, and you know, how do we encourage these folks that have pregnancies to not abort a baby but do something different with that baby, whereby we increase our workforce, not diminish it. Right now, Jim, as you know, as a country, our birth rate is below what it takes to even keep an economy rolling right along. We have to rely now on immigration to make that happen, and that's going to be to our own detriment.
Absolutely, on so many levels. You look at what's happening in Western Europe, just relative to birth rate. It's what's called the replacement rate,
that's right,
typically 2.2. We're below that now.
We're 1.8, 1.9 right now, so we're way below that.
Yeah. And immigration is the only reason we're close to that number right now. And unlike Western Europe, fortunately, we have a country in which people do want to immigrate. We do have people that want to be part of this, but that can't be the only answer.
No.
When we have our own families that are aborting their own children and the next generation, and then you think about the father's rights and the grandparents' rights and all of that, the church can be so proactively, powerfully a voice in the midst of all of this, and we've been made into a political bloc when we're so much more than that.
DennisonForum.com, folks, is where you go. Jim, it's always a joy having you. Great piece, and I'm glad you and I see eye to eye on this one.
Privilege to be on with both of you today.
Good stuff, Jim. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And yeah, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse there, folks. You guys have heard me talk about this many times. And I I value life. Yes.
Yeah.
I love, you know, every single person that's out there, every life that's out there, even those that never have the opportunity to be born, because I believe they are a life from conception. That's how I view it. That's how I look at it. But I also look at it from the financial employer end of things, because I know as an employer for all of these years how much of a struggle it is to, and I talk to clients daily where it's just a struggle to find people to do the work that needs done in this country. And a lot of that is because we've literally killed off entire generations of workforce.
Yeah.
It's our own fault.
Yeah, that's why we have an open border right now. They're just having the new workforce enter, really. That's why I think that's...
Folks, that's not the way to do it, by the way.
No.
We should be growing our own.
Yeah, well, and of course... knowing who's coming in and out of our country. But I think that has a lot to do with, you know, some people won't do certain work, and so they're just keeping this border open, and it's a hot mess.
And we'll come back and talk about this, but I'll tease you guys with this. So now, here in the grand state of Colorado, with our grand Emperor Polis,
who has now
decided to pay people to go back to work. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Yes. Oh, I did not know that.
We'll come right back. Affordable Interest Mortgage is next. Kurt Rogers will join me at 5. We'll talk today. By the way, we're going to talk about appraisals, appraisers. What happens if you think your appraisal is not correct? What can you do to make up that appraisal difference? Things along those lines. We'll cover all of that in the 5 o'clock hour. But in the meantime, if you need anything from Kurt, give him a call right now, 720-895-0500.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the asset manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
All right, folks, you've heard me talk here for really several months now, a good shop, and used car prices all-time high right now. If you're looking to either sell a car, trade a car, do something like that, it's probably the best time to do it, although finding a new car to replace it's going to be very difficult. So my advice is drive what you own, even if that means going through, fixing it up, doing some things to it that you maybe wouldn't have done otherwise in a different market. Well, guess what? Here's where we're at today, and a good shop can do all of that for you and really get your vehicle reconditioned and really make it as good as new. So you can find them by calling 720-541-7697, or better yet, just go to klzradio.com.
A good shop fights on your behalf to make sure you get the most out of your insurance claim.
Chances are, your insurance adjuster has never fixed a car before. Your adjuster may not realize that your vehicle has hidden or secondary damage as a result of your collision. So your insurance claim may not cover those repairs, unless your auto body shop advocates for you. Al Sturm has a long history of working with insurance companies, both as a customer service representative helping people with their claims over the phone and as a collision repair specialist, communicating between his own customers and their adjusters. Al and his team at A Good Shop will advocate for you behind the scenes, fighting on your behalf to make sure your claim covers everything. A Good Shop in North Glen and Commerce City. Certified collision repair worth referring. Fill out the contact form at klzradio.com/collision for $100 off your repairs.
Hi, this is Al Smith with Golden Eagle Financial. Join me at a workshop at Ruth Chris Steakhouse Tuesday evening, the 25th of May. To register, go to klzradio.com/money.
No liberal media bias here. This is Rush to Reason.
All right, I just talked a moment ago before we went to break about how the illustrious Emperor Polis has decided, executively, by the way, this did not go through any kind of a legislative process, but executively he has decided that he will pay people who are unemployed to go out and get a job.
Wow.
It's called Colorado Jumpstart.
Who's paying for this? Like, where is he drawing this?
Well,
I know.
State of Colorado has no money, so.
Where is he like gonna take our money, the funds from?
I don't know. Here we go. This is coming from Executive Order 104.
Okay.
And according to the order, the incentive fund will get $500,000 from the Coronavirus Relief Fund from the Disaster Emergency Fund controlled by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. So basically, this is money that we've borrowed.
Right.
Because
from
that
the
came
federal
from the
government.
Came from the stimulus packages,
okay.
Basically. I don't know which one, but
right.
One of the two. And it's borrowed money that we, as taxpayers now, will be paying off for the next 30 to 40 years, probably.
Did you say $500,000, though?
$500,000.
Like that's not going
to. This will help out most likely. So it's the way this works is for people that return to work between this past Sunday and May 29th, they'll be eligible for up to $1,600 for no longer being unemployed. And for people who return to work May 30th through June 26th, they'll be eligible for up to $1,200, but they'll have to stay employed to get the full benefit of the incentive. Now, this could, I didn't do the math on this, but somebody else did. I think this, I got to do the math. And I'm sorry, it's not in this article. It should be.
Yeah.
Just do the math. Somebody divide it out. If you take $500,000 and divide it by an average of like $1,400, what do you come up with? It'll
not
tell
a lot.
You.
Right.
It's not a ton of people, but that's
no, it's not a ton of people.
What we're now doing in the grand state of Colorado. Randy in Arvada, you're next.
Hey guys, I haven't talked to you for a long time, but I just had a couple comments here.
Sure.
This nonsense. We got 3.5 more years of this stuff to go. It's ridiculous. But so I just called my manager today, and I quit because I told him, I said, I'm quitting today. This is my sudden notice of resignation. But I said, I will be back tomorrow at work, so I qualify for my return to work bonus.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
What did he say?
He laughed.
Yeah.
He said, it sounds like a good idea. I think I'll do the same thing. Too.
Unbelievable. So I just did the math. It only helps about 340 people or so.
No.
It's not a ton of people, by
but,
the way.
You know, I think everybody that, you know, I'm just rounding off some, throwing out some numbers there, but about 50% of the people that have never missed work, I'm not kidding you. The last day off I had, I'm not making this up, was December 20th of last year. And before that, May 3rd of last year.
Yeah.
I have been working straight through.
Mm-hmm.
So about 50% of the people that work for a living are still out there working,
yep.
Paying taxes and everything else. And the rest of them are just letting us. And I appreciate that. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Randy. No, great comments, by the way. I liked what he said initially.
Yeah. It's kind of funny.
Tell your boss
it's like
you quit.
It's like the leftists, they were like, hey, let's try socialism. And then they realized like pretty quickly in like, oh, maybe this isn't going to work. So now they're like backtracking, encouraging people to go to work, praying to God people to go to work, paying people to interview, paying people like a bonus to start. I mean, because we don't have enough people working. at all right now.
No, we do not.
So it's like they thought, hey, let's try this, and then they realized, maybe not so much. Which is kind of I'm entertained by the whole thing actually.
How could you screw up things any worse than we have?
It's been
now?
Rapidly done though, John. Like when you look at every little area.
I know. Like almost like overnight.
Every day I wake up and I'm like, okay, what is Biden going to do today? What's going to happen today? And today, or was it? It was yesterday. I think he told, Netanyahu, hey,
stop.
Stop.
Cut it out, man.
After meeting with Rashida Tlaib or whatever, who is like openly anti-Semitic.
Very much so.
She says she gets a great feeling thinking about the Holocaust. Like this woman is sheer evil.
Mm-hmm.
He meets with her and then says, okay, let's talk to Israel and tell them to knock it off. When?
Come on, man.
Right. But I mean, people don't understand. Like Hamas and Hezbollah, they want Israel off the face of the planet.
Yes.
They want them completely gone. There nothing will satisfy them until that happens. And it's amazing to me that Biden, who, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of Democrats up until, you know, this administration have supported Israel.
And still do.
Right.
A lot of them still
so
do.
So I don't, what are they thinking right now? Like what? Like we're just changing course? We're going to go with Rashida now? Rashida's in charge?
I would hope not.
I'd hope not. But that's, it's terrible. It's scary to look at.
They continue down that path, they're going to implode their own party.
Yes.
Fine by me. Go for it.
But it's interesting to me. You look at Chuck Schumer. He's not been very vocal, and he's very strong pro-Jewish, pro-Israel, and he's being quiet right now.
Well,
so
I would
like,
hope so, given the fact of who he is.
Well, because I think he thinks that AOC is going to try to primary him for the Senate seat. That's the only reason I can think of.
Shock me.
Right, but I would think that most of New York would support Israel. So I don't understand his reasoning here. I'm amazed by the
I would
whole,
be more vocal if I were him. I guess that's what
yes.
you're trying to say, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, be more vocal.
Right
Chuck.
Now, yes.
Chucky,
they're the one democracy in the Middle East right now. And if you're a leftist, right, and you're like pro-feminazi or whatever out there, the way the rest of the Middle East treats women as opposed to how Israel treats women is night and day.
Mm-hmm.
So that alone would cause a leftist to be like, okay,
you
know.
Would think.
But I don't know. I'm very confused. I don't understand what he's doing. And at the same time,
do you think he knows?
I don't think. He's given money to Iran, which is then turning and giving money to Hamas. The whole thing is crazy, and it's just heating up. It's not dying down. So I think people are starting to like what's happening here.
Well. I don't have an answer for you.
I don't have an answer either. And just being a Christian, like we know a lot of stuff escalates and continues to escalate as, you know,
mm-hmm.
it gets closer to, you know, Jesus.
Okay, so before we talk to Steve Hauser in just 1 minute because it's in your notes.
Yeah.
Fully vaccinated people still wearing masks.
Yes. Have you seen?
I've seen some.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if they're vaccinated or not.
Right. Well, this reporter goes out in Washington, D.C. It's great. It's what is it from? Daily Caller?
Right.
Yeah, Daily Caller. She goes out and she starts asking people that are wearing masks, you know, why are you still wearing a mask? A lot of them.
Do you want me to play it?
Yeah, play a little bit of
it. Okay, I can play a little bit of this real quick. We've got time. Steve will. We'll call him as soon as we're done with the break here. Charlie, let me make sure. Twitter's weird. I got to make sure all my settings are right. Here we go.
Why? Because we're not protected 100% from COVID. So even if you have your vaccine, you can still get it. Hey, I'm Lisa with the Daily Caller. Today we are in Washington, D.C., where a lot of people are still wearing their masks outside, despite the new CDC
guidelines.
Bozos. We're going to ask
outside.
Them why.
Why are you still wearing a mask, and are you vaccinated?
Yeah, so thank you for that question. I am vaccinated, and I am a bit skeptical of their decision.
Because I feel like the coronavirus doesn't go away after the CDC says it's okay.
I mean, I thought it was a little premature, the CDC guideline.
It's a little concerning to see that a lot of people outside are not wearing it.
I don't want to get other people like to think that it's okay.
These are
not
young people, by the way, for all of you listening.
Yeah, like,
I don't want it to make it look normal.
These are people that probably have no ill effects from COVID anyways.
Not at all.
Wear their mask.
Hi, how are you?
These are people that didn't even get vaccinated, by the way.
Just precautious, extra cautious for my safety.
Because I'm a nervous Nelly.
I walk around sometimes in close proximity to people that aren't masked. And do you have the vaccine yet?
Yes, I had 2 shots already, fully vaccinated.
And if we are vaccinated, I don't think
the like it's all happening so fast.
What is
that? I agree with
how
though.
How protected we are with the vaccinations,
like the CDC switching
who knows
there
with the new strains that are coming out.
And until we know that the city is safe, I think if you're outside, it's generally okay. But like,
then why are you wearing a mask, bozo?
Vigilant in the meantime.
And we don't know who has it or doesn't have the vaccine or not. I'm hot.
I think there should be some way where you can see if others have been vaccinated.
Oh, sure. Let's go that route.
Then you can easily spot that.
Let's put a brand on our arm, shall we, there, pal?
Vaccinated.
Tattoo on your neck works. How about that? A big V on your neck. How's that?
It's a professional look. We're at work right now, and we deal in the public space. So we do try and encourage the message for people to feel still comfortable.
Because I haven't been vaccinated, so that's why I still wear my mask.
I haven't gotten my second dose yet, so I know I'm like not fully vaccinated.
Outdoors, I think it's a little more safe as my mask is falling down.
I'm not gonna lie, when I'm not working, I do tend to keep my mask down in public. But we are also encouraging people that if they go into our businesses, we still want our business owners and all of the patrons for those businesses to feel comfortable.
Indoors is what concerns me, like movie theaters.
And why are you wearing a mask outside?
The idea of being able to go to concerts or things like that.
All right, I've seen enough.
Yeah, I
they're
feel...
just they're afraid. Here's the real answer. They're all still afraid because the government has done, yes, the government
it's
has
amazing.
Done a great job
yes.
of literally turning these people into sheeple. They have no idea how to think for themselves. They're relying on exactly what whoever at the CDC or Fauci, whoever tells them, even though, by the way, folks, I've said this now for the past 14 months, it's not based on science. I've shown you the data that proves it's not based on science. This is based on so many things outside of science, it's ridiculous.
They're absolutely terrified. Mm-hmm. It's, you know what? And I was in the car yesterday with my daughter, and this guy pulls up to us. He's in his car. He's got his mask on. He's alone. Okay. And like, part of me like wanted to be like, you idiot, you mm-hmm. moron. But then like, I God just like literally touched my heart. He goes, that man is full of fear. He is so afraid.
Yes.
And so he said, you know, he just spoke to my heart. I said, pray for him. Pray that they get rid of this fear, because that is what's gripping them.
Mm-hmm, it is.
So my daughter and I said, let's just pray for him. Let's just pray that, because he's really, like, if you're driving around in your car and you're alone and you're wearing a mask, you are terrified. This is somebody that's really walking in fear. And fear can cause people to not be able to mm-hmm. do anything.
It's crippling.
It's crippling. I remember as a kid, you have a nightmare. You can't move. Like,
It is.
Yeah.
So you prayed for Mr. Dumas.
I did. I'm finding myself.
So you knew his name
I'm
already.
Seeing, yeah.
Based on
I'm
that.
Seeing
got
it kind of like, like, and I'm totally like all. I'm all about like you do you right.
right.
But I'm realizing these people that are like to that extent, that's like they're really scared, John. Like terrified.
I know.
I feel bad because I would hate to go through life.
I would too.
With that much fear.
I would too. All right, and folks, again, one of the things you don't need to fear about is your future after you leave this earth. Make sure you're leaving your family, everything behind the way it needs to be, so you're not another burden. You know, leaving a burden on them is what I should say. Michael Bailey can do that for you. He'll get you all your state stuff in order. 720. Make sure to get the prefix right. 720-394-6887. And always just go to klzradio.com.
There's always plenty of time until there isn't. KLZ's mobile estate planner, Michael Bailey, frequently gets phone calls from prospective clients the day before they undergo major surgeries because it suddenly occurs to them they might die someday. Meet with Michael Bailey now so he can write your will of trust and establish your medical and financial powers of attorney before you actually need them. KLZradio.com/estate.
John Rush will give you the confidence to grow. Every single one of the businesses coached by John Rush made more money last year, and most of them are either moving into larger facilities or expanding to add new locations, because all of them chose to move forward aggressively rather than letting fear hold them back. John Rush will help you take the emotions out of your decisions, starting with the way you manage your employees. Send him an email now, john@rushtoreason.com.
Leadership is not only what you say, it's what you do. The Trump administration's policies empowered America to become energy independent for the first time in 50 years. In just 4 months, the Harris-Biden-Rice administration has brought us gas shortages and $3 a gallon gas. Kim Munson here. Friday, my fellow Liberty Toastmasters share their thoughts about leadership. Owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool, Hal Van Herke, explains entrepreneurial leadership. That's Friday, 6 to 7 a.m., 1 to 2 p.m., again 10 to 11 p.m., right here on KLZ 560 and KLZ 100.7 FM.
Tired of the corporate rat race? Time to retire? Call Chris Cantwell at Transworld Business Advisors to buy or sell your business. Find Chris Cantwell at KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
And we're back. Myself, Rachel King, conservative mama with me, and Steve House joining us now as well. Mr. House, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, we're doing great. We're trying to figure out life and what goes on and why we, you know, are doing some of the things that we're doing. And there's still people that are, you know, we just played, you know, vaccinated, that are wearing masks and still afraid of their shadow.
Outside.
And yet the CDC finally figured out that, yeah, outside. Yet the CDC finally, last Friday, imagine that, because the jobs report, I think, finally figured out that we better get things back on track or we're really going to be in trouble. So is it really science, Steve, or is there many other things that come into play?
Well, it's not, it's certainly not science. I mean, you know, at this point in time, if you're vaccinated, I guess you should feel confident that you're not going to get the coronavirus. And even if you do, it's going to be a very minor symptomatic version. If you're not vaccinated and you've had coronavirus, I talked to a doc this morning who said, I said, what do you think my immunity is since I've had coronavirus? And she said, somewhere between 8 months and forever. They don't know the answer.
Wow.
And I think that we see that all the time. I mean, the COVID-1 vaccine, SARS-CoV-1 in 2005, those folks still have immunity. And people believe that your T cells and the immune system in your body will remember coronavirus forever because it's, you know, it's a unique virus. So, you know, those folks shouldn't be wearing masks. I've actually been out and about in Colorado a fair amount in the last 2 days, and nowhere I'm going do I find people wearing masks.
I'm the same way.
Awesome.
I just very rarely see it.
I'm the same way. Occasionally in some of the, I mean, early on in the weekend, you could see some people, you know, kind of trying to figure out, what do I do? I don't want to get yelled at, so I'm going to wear a mask, but I'm not going to wear a mask. And you kind of could get that sense. But as we've gone further into the week, Steve, I'm seeing, it's amazing. Just each day, it seems like there's less and less and less and less of them wearing them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and, you know, when the death rate nationally falls below about 400 people a day, and it has been down there for a lot recently, sometimes it'll tick back up. But if you look at the average death rate falling into the 340s, 350s, it's not a pandemic anymore.
No.
Because it doesn't meet the 5%.
Steve, it never was, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because if you take COVID-only deaths, not the comorbidity, but COVID-only deaths, we don't qualify as a pandemic.
Right.
Right. And it was COVID-only, but we also eliminated virtually all of the deaths associated with pneumonia and things like that.
Right.
It's just, it's insane. So.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. No.
If somebody was shot and they tested them for
that was up in Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Yeah, the coroner, who, by the way, is not a conservative by any means, complained about it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, for everybody listening, to give Steve some credit here, we are now nationally on a 7-day average. We have 350 million people in the country. We're a 7-day average of 613 people dying from COVID. And I've seen even folks backing up those numbers, Steve, saying, yeah, let's not even claim that all these are COVID-related or a COVID deaths, because there's a lot of other things going on even with that 613.
Yeah, I mean, if you really look, and the hard part is you got people saying, well, you know, we have over 600,000 COVID deaths, and then you say, yeah, you know, I know, but, you know, we've also had somewhere around 4,400, 4,500 U.S. deaths based on the vaccine killing people. Oh, you can't count those numbers. Why not?
Yeah.
Because the CDC hasn't validated them. Well, the CDC didn't validate 600,000 COVID deaths either. So
that's right.
Right.
You can't have it both ways, folks.
Yeah.
Those of you that are on the left, you can't have it both ways.
And aren't they backdating that where you report the vaccinations? I'm hearing that that's way behind right now. Is that?
Yes.
We
had a doctor on yesterday that said that.
Reporting,
yes. Yes.
The bears or whatever. It's
yes.
not.
Yes.
It's not updated at
you
all.
You are correct. You're correct.
Well, there's actually two problems with it. One is that it's about 1% of the total, because people just don't call in and report.
Right.
And the second problem is they took thousands of reported deaths across the country in all corners of the country, and they reconciled all of them in less than 3 days.
Oh.
So think about that. So you're going to go investigate 4,000 plus
no.
deaths. You're going to look at documentation. You're going to look at pre-existing conditions. You're going to look at medical records. and you're going to do all of that in less than 3 days? I don't think so.
I agree.
What are you saying? They said, oh, you're fine, everything's fine, there's no concern here?
They invalidated a whole bunch of the vaccine-related self-reported deaths and problems. I mean, there's thousands of them reported.
Right.
I mean, there's only 4,000-some deaths, but even the other ones, you know, the causes. I mean, we've seen people, you know, walk out of having a shot. There were three people who walked out of having a shot in the same location with Moderna and go into a seizure in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're taking all of that stuff and they're saying, now, we couldn't verify that any of that stuff was true, so it's not true. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You did it all in 3 days. You looked at 10, 20, 30,000 cases.
Can't.
You looked at even 4,400 deaths. You looked at them well enough in 3 days to know.
Can't.
So my question is, okay. So let's say it's they're not. They are. You know, they're saying, hey, they're invalidating everything like that. It's fine. I'm moving on. Like, don't look at the adverse, effects. At some point, like, won't it catch up? And then people are going to be like, why didn't you tell us about these? I mean, and then you're going to have people that are really struggling with those scientists and those doctors and those people, those
experts.
Well,
they've already, you know, you're already hearing it from some of the things even we just reported on a moment ago with that reporter on the street, you know, back east, Steve, that people are already losing their faith in the CDC and the government as it is. This is just adding to it.
This will add to it. If we start to have some serious adverse, effects
they're losing
here,
they're really screwing
up. It's gone.
They're
losing
over. Credibility. Yeah, agree.
Yeah, I mean, and that's an under-discussed, under-reported risk, right? Because, you know, it's like the boy who cried wolf, you know, eventually there is a fire. And you're not ready for the fire, and you burn in the fire. I mean, it's just one of those things where they got to deal with it. And we're getting closer and closer to validating that this was a manufactured virus in Wuhan that was leaked out of the lab. And, you know, I think a lot of people realize that or believe that, but now there's almost, you know, they're almost at the point where they know that.
Yep.
Yeah. Proof.
Steve, did you see Rand Paul talk to Fauci was it last week in his congressional hearing? Did you see that whole back and forth?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, and then later he comes out like with the proof that Fauci really did fund gain of function.
Right.
So, I mean...
Yeah,
that's
no debate
a huge
there.
Red flag there, though. I mean,
nobody, and of course, nobody's going to report on that in the liberal media.
The real debate in all that is because there's also a tie-in between the Gates Foundation and CIR Bright, and you know some of the ownership. So someone's going to have to tell me whether it's someone in our Defense Department or someone in our Health Department. Why is it important to figure out how to make a virus that will transfer from animals to humans?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the only
why are we doing
you
that?
Say, well, we would do that. We would do that so we could fight it, right?
Right.
Well, if you have to create it in order to learn how to fight it,
you don't need it.
If you didn't create it,
that's right.
The only answer, John, is a bioweapon. I mean,
that's right.
Only
exactly.
Yeah, because you want to use it against other people or your own.
It's so shady. There's so much out there right now.
I agree.
And then I don't think it's just coincidence that Gates and his wife were divorcing in the midst of all this with his ties.
I think
she
just finally had enough. And I'm done.
Maybe.
No, I think so.
But she's known all this stuff for
years.
Oh,
but I think with every woman, there's a tipping point.
Yeah.
Where they just finally say, you know what? I'm done.
At 27 years, though? I think you're in it at that point.
Well, you are.
I don't know.
But
I just find the whole thing
shady.
No,
but there's always, Steve, you would know this as well. There's always that point for every person, by the way, male or female. There's a point where you just finally say, you know what? I've finally had enough. I'm done. And I think I don't know Melinda personally. I've not even talked to anybody that knows her, so I can't say this with any kind of validation. But my gut feeling is she finally just said, "I'm done."
Right.
I mean, keep in mind he had all sorts of ties to Epstein and all sorts of other things as well. And now you pile all this on top of that, and she finally just says, "I'm done."
But they had an arrangement prior,
I know, when
they got married. But, he was allowed to go eloping away with his lady friend once a year. I mean, come on,
stuff changes.
But there was more than that lady friend. There was a woman from China that was a translator.
True, yes.
There was, the parties. I mean, it's going to be very difficult for him to ever recover from this.
Yep.
Yes.
But we still got to go back to the fact that it's great to see people starting to live their life again.
Agree.
Yes.
The thing that worries me is the idea that right now in this moment where they say, if you're wearing a mask, that means you haven't been vaccinated. it was always, if you wore your mask religiously, you were one of the good guys.
Yeah. Right.
You know, if you were the ones who took your mask off, you were one of the bad guys. Now, if you're wearing a mask, you're a bad guy.
Yeah.
Right. If you're not wearing,
it's a whole mind F on people. Like, because they don't know what to think. That's now. Right. They're like, wait, are you my enemy now that you're wearing a mask? Because you were, if you weren't wearing one, you were my enemy. It's just gotten messy. It's funny.
All right, let's shift gears, Steve, and talk about what you texted this morning about as far as the, you know, some of the debates we need to be having inside the Republican Party to really get us on track and capitalize. I believe we've got a real opportunity to capitalize on some mistakes that the other side is making right now. And yet, if we don't have the right dialogue heading into that, we will not capitalize.
It's absolutely true. And I think the other thing that happens besides that is that confusion creates an ununified or confident perspective, right? So I'll give you an example. Joan Poston, friend of mine, her and her husband Paul are great Republicans, great donors. They do a lot. She's run for office. Every day she sends me a question. You know, today she asked me a question about whether you could take paper ballots and you could actually count them after they've been voted without using a machine, without using a Dominion voting machine. And she quoted the fact that a clerk up in Summit County says, no, you can't do that because of Title I. Well, if you try to find out what Title I is, it'll take you days and days and days to figure that out. So that's one example where I said, okay, you know what, Joan, you need to go into a room with a bunch of Republicans and get some clerks in the room, and you need to have a debate about it.
Yeah.
What is the truth, right? Just the same is true about climate change, about, you know, religious freedom, about, you know, everything that's going on. We have this problem. And I talked to somebody today, another person today was telling me about, you know, they got all this animosity towards Liz Cheney up in Wyoming for what she did with her vote on impeachment. I said, guys, it's time for Republicans to get in a room in an off year, keep the press out, keep the Democrats out, and just go through a debate on these issues. Because when you're done, you're not necessarily all going to agree, but the talking points will have been figured out, and you will have humanized each other and your position. And if we don't start having those debates right now and getting people engaged, we're going to walk into the next election and people are going to be divided across the board, not knowing what our position is on most of anything.
And by the way, that's true nationally and locally.
Yeah. I think one problem with that is social media, because you can find your arch nemesis on social media and argue with them, and then you meet them face to face and you're like, oh, maybe I don't hate you as much as I thought I did. And it's weird. Like, I've had that where I've like had some serious arguments with people online, and then I meet them and I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is weird.
Because dialogue, to Steve's point, when you start dialoguing, which by the way is different than keyboard cowboys, because when you dialogue and you add emotion into it and you can see facial expressions and body language and all these things that, by the way, you do not get in emails or social media or text messages or things like that. That's why I've always said that if you've ever got a real issue, you need to have a phone call or a face-to-face, because it's much, much different than it is doing it through, you know, through electronic form of communication, however that happens to be. And Steve, that's what you're trying to say here, is until we have some of those discussions, we're just going to keep going round and round.
Yeah, and let's take it one step further. Let's take it to the point where we say, all right, we're going to debate what's going on in Oregon right now, where a third of the state is going to vote to secede to Idaho because they don't like the liberal policies of the state of Oregon. So Rachel may be in a position where she says, I think they're right. I mean, they got to get the heck out of that liberal, blue, ridiculous government. And I'm going to call up Rachel and say, all right, you have to argue in the negative.
Right.
You have to argue against secession.
Even though you believe in it, right.
Because the part of the problem is if we never argue the other side, then we never learn what the argument is.
That's what they teach in debate class, by the way. It's the same thing.
Yes, devil's advocate. You have to play it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So we've got to have these internal debates, but, I mean, we need people to come in so that it's not an echo chamber. It's like, okay, John, I think we ought to have more stimulus payments. So, John, you're going to argue for stimulus payments in the next debate. And you're going to go, what are you talking about? I hate the idea. People are not getting their jobs because they're sitting at home. I went to a rental car agency this week, and the line was an hour and 20 minutes long because they have nobody working.
Right.
So how can I argue for stimulus payments? Well, the moment that you figure out how to argue for stimulus payment is going to be the moment you know how to argue against it.
Right.
Right.
And
you have to learn to think like your enemy. You do. And not to say that they're our enemy, but you have to learn to think like the person that you're, you know, debating. You
on
have
top
to
of that,
think like them.
On top of that, Steve and Rachel both, I also see an opportunity when you have those types of meetings, you have people in the same room and we're heading a particular direction, you also now start strategizing in all the different races that you, you know, potentially can win in, which, by the way, I think is part of the strategic nature of what we need to do, you start talking about, okay, what are those talking points in those areas that we need to be having to win those particular races? Because every race is going to be different when it comes to those talking points. Correct, Steve?
No question about it, and that's exactly right. And, oh, by the way, when you're in an odd year and it's May, and we don't know what the districts are going to look like, and you're trying to rebuild the Republican Party from losses in 2020, now is the perfect time to get Republicans together and do that. Because you know what you're going to find out? If we got into a debate about reparations, for example, and if I happen to argue in the positive on reparations with you, you're going to find out where your gaps are.
Right.
Especially if you're arguing against a really good debater who's arguing in the affirmative about something they don't believe in, to beat you. If we don't start having these conversations rather than just getting in rooms together and going, okay, how many volunteers do we need this year, and you know, who are the candidates going to be? I think we ought to have debates. We've got some gubernatorial candidates. Put the gubernatorial candidates, the Secretary of State candidates, put them all in a room.
Yeah, start to weed it out.
Now.
Right, why not?
Yeah, well, and what we'd find, Steve, if we did some of that on the front side, you may get down to where you don't have, you know, seven or eight people in the primary. You end up with one or two that we're voting for, which would solidify things and not separate it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That is exactly right, because you'd find out who, everybody would find out their own strengths and weaknesses.
Yep.
I debated a candidate last week on a phone call, and he called me and asked for help. I said, all right, let's debate a subject. We debated the subject, and when we got done, he said, I can't run for office. And I said, why not? He said, because there's no way I could beat you in a debate. I said, hold on a minute. You couldn't beat me in a debate on that subject today, but what you learned today is you need to prepare differently.
Right.
Right.
That's where we've got to go.
That's
and we've got
we
have
to do.
That's ready to go 3 years from now.
That's right.
Right. And right. I think just doing what we're doing now, you know, it's preparation. It's preparation for how to debate. It's preparation, having that conversation now.
Yep.
So when you do get up there, you know how to handle yourself.
Which I know this is a pipe dream, but Steve, the best way for us to beat Polis in 2022 is to only have one person on the Republican ticket in the primary and not five or six.
Yeah.
I know that's a pipe dream, but if we could get to that, what better way to, you know, because that message that you're then sending at that point to all of the citizens of Colorado is, we know our candidate, we don't even need a primary, we know exactly where we're going, and we are going for the governor's seat, and we are going to oust Governor Polis and all of the bad things he did during COVID.
Right.
That's the message.
Well, that's what the left does, though. They unify hard behind someone, and they go full strong with it. They do. But we're all like...
So here's-
several different splatters all over the place. Yeah, no, go ahead.
Here's one other aspect that we haven't talked about as part of this, and that is, let's say we put candidates for Congress, the Senate, the governor, you know, Secretary of State, Attorney General in a room over the next few months, and we debate the critical issues that are coming up, education, healthcare, you know, the climate, all that stuff. We might find that a candidate that's currently thinking about running for a state Senate seat or an Attorney General seat should be our gubernatorial candidate.
Right.
True.
Because
we
discover that in the process.
That's right.
So
That's right.
I agree. It'd be nice to get down to one candidate, but let's take the time right now go out and have robust debate.
I agree. Mm-hmm. All right. I'll leave you with that. Steve, it's always a joy. Thanks, man. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Let's talk. We can even talk off air at some point, Steve, about that. I'd love to even maybe help organize that if at all possible, be the moderator or whatever.
Yeah.
I'd be more than happy to do some of that and make that happen. Franktown Firearms, folks, is next. And, man, we talk about all these key issues, one of them being the Second Amendment. I am a firm believer that without it, we're not here today. So please exercise that today. Help support them as well. They're doing a lot of great things to even help the young people out there to know and understand and respect firearms. So if you would, please go see them today, even if it's nothing more than just to support them any way you can. KLZradio.com, 720-770-7777.
Preserve your liberty, protect your family, and have fun at the same time. Everyone at Franktown Firearms has the same goal: to fire off some freedom seeds safely and confidently. That common goal builds relationships based on shared values and mutual respect, which makes Franktown Firearms one of the few places you can preserve your liberty, protect your family, and have fun at the same time. Because they maintain good relationships with suppliers, treat customers with respect, and offer lower tax rates, Franktown Firearms continues to sell guns and ammo at or below MSRP. But they don't only want you to buy a gun. They want to see you develop confidence through practice. Fill out the contact form now at klzradio.com/franktown for $50 off your initiation fee, plus your first month free. Range members, first responders, and military veterans receive discounts in the shop, as well as discounts on all classes. Franktown Firearms, where friends are made.
Some of you, by the way, that have a reverse mortgage already may be looking at recasting that, changing it because the interest rates are different. Bruce can help you with that as well. So he is our reverse mortgage specialist, American Liberty Mortgage, klzradio.com, or call 303-467-7821.
A reverse mortgage with Bruce Simmons puts more money in your pocket. One of the common misconceptions Bruce hears about reverse mortgages is that they're too expensive. But here in the Front Range, chances are good your property value will keep going up even after you get the loan, which means your overall equity may actually increase over time instead of shrinking. Plus, you get the benefit of using a portion of your home's value now instead of waiting until you sell the house. Best of all, FHA reverse mortgages are non-recourse loans, which means they're guaranteed by the government. So no matter what happens to the housing market, as long as you keep paying taxes and insurance, you can never lose the house or pass on debt to your heirs beyond the value of the home. A reverse mortgage puts more money in your pocket. Ask Bruce Simmons now at klzradio.com/reverse. Personalized reverse mortgage expertise. NMLS number 409914. American Liberty Mortgage is an equal housing lender.
All right, Barber's Foods, folks. The barbecue season, let's just say, is upon us.
Yes, it's which really, I love.
Really,
let's do
oh,
this.
I do too. I love it. I love cooking outside. I love all the food that goes with it. I love smoking. You guys have heard me talk about all of that. And I will tell you, there's not a better company out there to buy all of your meat from other than Barber's Foods. I don't know where they exist. A lot of you say, oh, I can go buy such and such, you know, steaks and have them shipped in, or I can do this, right? I can tell you what, folks, I've tried all of it. I've been there, done that. Nobody does what Barber's Foods does when it comes to delivering meat to your door that literally is the best you can buy, whether it's beef, bison, pork, poultry, you name it, they can do it. And I'm living proof because I eat it. It's in my freezer. I store up. I stock up. It is literally the best meat you will ever eat, bar none, period. I stake my name on it. It's barbersfoods.com. Order today. Tell them Rush to Reason sent you.
It's time to get out the grill for some all-natural, mouth-watering meats raised right here at home from Barber's Foods. For over 70 years in Colorado, Barber's Foods has stayed true to their mission to provide their customers with only the highest quality organic, antibiotic-free meats from family farms they know personally. So whether you're buying beef, bison, pork, or poultry, they know where it's coming from and the families who raise the animals with care and respect. Place your order now at barbersfoods.com or call 303-466-7338. Pick up your order at the Denver warehouse located at I-70 and Brighton Boulevard near the National Western Center. Or for those in the Denver metro area, Barber's Foods will deliver direct. Colorado-sourced bison, organic grass-fed beef, USDA prime beef, purebred Wagyu, slow-raised non-GMO Duroc pork, free-range chicken, non-GMO turkeys, and more. Barber's Foods, 100% Colorado native owned and operated. Barbersfoods.com.
This is Josh with Business Equipment Service. Here's a message from one of our satisfied customers. Nancy with Metron Technology said, "We have used Business Equipment Service for many years. They are always pleasant to work with and responsive to our infrequent requests for service. We highly recommend them." If you are looking into purchasing office equipment or need service on equipment you currently have, give us a call at 303-825-5664.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Myself, Rachel Keene, Charlie Grimes, of course. Fast first hour, by the way. And
already? Oh, my gosh.
And made sure this morning when I talked to her on the phone that I noted this as well, that you can catch anything we talk about. It's really easy now. Just go right to rushtoreason.com, click on the show notes. She categorizes everything. We've got all the podcasts up. Charlie does a really good job of getting those up at night. I then go home. I place all those up on SoundCloud and then takes all of those and literally builds transcripts, if you would, out of the key things we talk about. She adds all the links, the things we do, all of that, because she takes all of the notes that I have, and then she makes all of that work for you all so that you don't have to run around searching for things that we talk about. That's so great. Please use that resource, and I appreciate Ann in doing that very much. And again, it's all at the website, rushtoreason.com. And for those of you that are listening, it's close to 7 o'clock. Thank you so much for listening to this replay hour. We do appreciate it very much. Otherwise, though, Rachel and I will be back. Hour number two is next. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.